At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. It's time for this week's Friday Morning GM with co-host Voss Larikos. Voss, how you doing?
Doing well, Ken. Enjoyed the combine. Looking forward to the first wave of free agency next week. So exciting time of year for roster construction enthusiasts. How are you?
Doing well. And I urge people to next week not be just trying to hit that F5 key every I have the creek correct, right? It's not F4 or F5. I think it's F5 to refresh your screen. Don't hit that every 2 seconds for free agency. You're not going to be satisfied with what the Ravens are doing, probably. The Ravens are still very tight against the cap, even though they got a little bit of flexibility to make the Matabike deal, which is certainly something we're going to be talking about a little later on this show.
Yes, surely. Surely. Now, I don't expect it to be an active, but yeah, we'll circle back to that later.
So let's talk a little combine here. And I really kind of want to focus on the offensive tackle spot, because I think that's where I think that's the Ravens' greatest priority. They can use a wide receiver. They can use a cornerback. They can use an edge rusher, and they'll have a chance, hopefully, to get some players who might be able to help them in later rounds through free agency, in particular for the pass rushing group. But at offensive tackle, there's no substitute for drafting a left tackle.
100% agreed there. I think it is an equal tier need to receiver and corner in particular. However, there's more scarcity of tackles, so that makes it more of a priority need, as you said. The thing that first takeaway I had from, you know, just watching the combine and seeing the measurements and how these gentlemen move through the drills, there's really only three true left tackles in the first round. Alt, Fatuanu, and Fashanu. Those are really three. And then you have, you know, four right tackles and then maybe three or four interior guys.
You know, Alt and Fashanu are the guys who are, in my opinion, ready on day one to play. Fatano is a step behind. I'm having the second tier, J.C. Latham of Alabama, Tyler Guyton of Oklahoma. I have seen Talisa Fuaga, the Oregon State guy, higher in people's rankings. I gotta say, I think there's a chance he ends up at guard. Daniel Jeremiah has already said it looks like he'll be a good guard, and arm length would tell you that's going to be more likely true than not, I would say. Now, he could still end up at right tackle or whatever, but that still limits him, and he doesn't exactly meet the left tackle need. And then you have a set of guys who are developmental but have a very high ceiling. And the three guys I would put in there specifically, all of whom I think will be taken in the first 50 picks, are Kingsley Suamataia from BYU, and he started for just 2 years. Patrick Paul of Houston, and Amarius Mims of Georgia, of course, has only started 8 college games so far. So very limited playing time, but really was the freak of this combine in terms of size and a couple of other measurables.
Yes, sure was. First, just to circle back to Fuaga, I agree. He's right tackle is best case, and I think, you know, a guard is probably – he looks like a guard. He just has the build of a guard.
He's built like a pair. He's built like a gourd, and that's ideal guard shape to have that weight in the hips.
Agreed. So – I'd also throw in Kieran, and I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name, A-M-E-N, from Yale, who's another developmental tackle, left tackle. But Kingsley from BYU is apparently gaining some steam, at least as far as mock drafts, this week as a potential pick at 30 for the Ravens. I guess all that being said, the point is it's a very deep offensive tackle class, offensive line class. But there's no guarantee that it's going to be a left tackle. And I think there's questionable whether taking a guard at pick 30 is good value.
Oh, I the biggest guard story I have, the biggest, one of the biggest draft stories that I've told a number of times so that people know it from this show is when the Ravens were drafting 29 in 2007 and they got Ben Grubbs with that pick, the guy I really wanted was Joe Staley. And of course the 49ers jumped up as soon as number 28 was on the clock, traded for that pick, took Joe Staley and made me, you know, go into conniptions basically. And I was very upset about that. And Ben Grubbs didn't end up being a bad player and probably not even terrible value at 30, given he gives you five good offensive line seasons at guard. Mike Preston still, or did for a long time, claim he was still better than Yanda, which is ridiculous.
Right.
But, but it was he was, you know, he was a decent value player. But if they could have had Staley, I mean, their left tackle situation would have been fixed for a long time.
Oh yeah, what Staley played for about a dozen years, if I recall.
Yeah,
yeah. So yeah, good class again. You know, I it would have been maybe more beneficial if Fatuanu didn't test quite as well. He was really shuffling his feet and mirroring well in pass protection, maybe give you a better chance of him falling down to 30. From a Ravens perspective, I don't think there's going to be a home run tackle at 30, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and I would agree. I think also, though, the Ravens, they probably weren't going to get that no matter what. And I think that the Ravens are very fortunate. This is as deep a class it is. Maybe even they can trade back or take a project at 30. But they need a guy who could be ready to play in 2025, not 2024. So they don't need to get Alt or Fashanu or Fatano, if you believe he's that guy, to jump in and play the first year. They just need somebody who's ready in 25, and that will allow them to keep Ronnie Stanley for, you know, provided they keep Ronnie Stanley for the year, I should say. If they somehow got Joe Alt and you know, there's a pot mask video or something that has Joe Alt dropping to 30, then, you know, you could feel, I think they'd feel pretty good about letting Ronnie Stanley go if they had to do that. But I personally, the barriers to entry at left tackle are so high that I think it'd be very foolish to let Ronnie go for an $8.3 million savings.
I would agree with that. I think it's seeming like the team wants to try to get him to agree to a pay cut. I've seen that mentioned quite a bit. Jonas Schaefer wrote that up in his article. I think he proposed a $6 million pay cut with a chance to earn it back in incentives. We'll see how it goes. We'll probably have some clarity on that situation relatively soon. But I had a few other takeaways from the combine, unless you had anything else on the offensive tackles. So the way it's shaken out, you know, pass defenders, the Ravens could use an edge or a corner, certainly. I think we've identified, I'm pretty much in the market of tapping that efficiency of the veteran edges available. Yeah. And, you know, you already have some young guys. You already have Ojabo, who's a developmental DPR. You know, you had Turner and Verse tested really well, and Robinson, Chop Robinson. I don't think they're necessarily going to be there, and I'm not sure I would even necessarily want Chop Robinson at 30. The other guy is Latu, who is a technician, but has significant medical history with a potential, you know, spinal injury that he came back from. Same thing at corner. You know, Arnold and Mitchell really have solidified themselves at the top of the cornerback board, probably both gone in the top 15 or 20. Rakestraw did not have the best combine. Seems more suited to a slot. Wiggins is, you know, got hurt, ran a blazing 40. I'd probably a good pick at 30, but not a home run necessarily.
I'd love that pick at 30 if they could get him, but I don't know if they will. Yeah,
sure. Lassiter is probably another guy to keep in mind is in a trade back scenario. And then most of the other corners are slot shape and slot size and slot experience. So not the deepest corner class. All that to say, I think there's a decent chance a wide receiver will be the best player available on the board at 30.
Yeah, and obviously BPA is going to drive some of their needs, some of their selections. But in order to draft for needs, one of the tools they have in their toolbox is to trade down. And so it makes all sorts of sense in terms of them getting more value, believing in flatter valuation. Trades are probably going to be made at JJ values, and you probably end up getting more player value. You might miss out on a peak player, might miss out on an all-pro player by not taking your pick at 30. But I generally like the strategy of trading down. The Ravens always seem to get basically an even match on the JJ value, and they believe in the flatter valuations, which is very clear from the fact that they trade down almost exclusively in terms of their history.
Yeah, very, very few trade ups early on. I mean, they'll trade up once in a while for a guy they want to grab and give up a little capital. You know, it's a, as DaCosta says, you know, it's a, what does he call it? You know, it's a, what's the term I'm looking for? The business. It's taking swings, not the dartboard, because I know you don't like that one, but the other one.
He says lottery ticket, and I say it's more like World Series of Poker entries.
Right. So you want more entries. That's the point I'm trying to make. Yeah. I personally would be strongly in favor of either after the big three are gone, a receiver, but Adonai Mitchell and Brian Thomas from LSU. If they're 30, I think they'd be great to provide that element to the offense. And also, people talk about surplus value. Rashad Bateman's fifth-year option, assuming you take a receiver in the first round, you're not picking up that option. You're gaining that money back to the cap. It's a pretty clear demonstration of surplus value there. Final thought on the combine. Pretty good group of height, weight, speed running backs. 8 running backs with a sub 4.5 40 in the combine. I think there's a good chance you can find a contributor to your rotation in round 4 or 5.
Yeah, there's guys to choose from. And DaCosta has come out and said that it's not a real deep running back class. I think what he's saying is that it's not a really top heavy running. There's not two or three Bijan Robinson and all Geyer and those guys. They're not running around in this draft. They have, you know, less talent at the very top, but they do have, you know, every year they have running backs they like, and they've done a wonderful job of finding them. And I'm maybe a little bit concerned that the success of Mitchell and Mostert and also Achan, who was drafted high, but the other two were UDFAs, is going to push teams to be more willing to accept less size for more speed. So those players where you make that compromise, I think are going to be in higher demand this year.
Yeah, Guarnado, I believe, from Louisville, ran a really fast 40, and he's probably a guy that will be pushed up on the, you know, from the historical success or the recent success of those guys you just mentioned.
Well, let's move on. Talk a little bit about Justin Madubuike, tagged on Tuesday. And I think that now the next question is, the tag has happened, but there's still a huge what comes next with Justin Madubuike. And obviously the Ravens are right now, and they have to, by the league year, they have to get their cap situation proper, but they're currently at approximately minus 10 million in terms of cap.
Yes. 9.97, according to Brian McFarland. They have to be in compliance by next Wednesday, 3/13. So they got to come up with about 10 million here. I think there's three easy avenues to do it. Not necessarily easy, but three main avenues to do it. Lamar restructure frees up $11 million. That would be one of the best options. Justin Madubuike extension could free up about $10 million. Now, all this money has to be paid back. You want to make that clear. Extensions, void years, restructures, they're all different vehicles to borrow from the future.
Well, a Madubuike extension is a good one in the sense that it keeps Madubuike in Baltimore for more years than just one also. So, yes, there are extensions like restructures, and simple restructures as they're called, where you pay effectively, give the player a check for his entire salary at the beginning of the year and treat it as a signing bonus and move that money to the future. That's just borrowing from the future. That's not creating any additional play value. At least a Madubuike extension creates play value.
Right. Sure, I understand that. But if his contract comes in at 20 million a year and his cap hit the first year is 10 million, that other 10 million is going to be paid back in the future at some point. And the third is to make a couple cuts. Bowser and Ricard together get you to 9.5 million. You could probably find a way, maybe a Justice Hill, a small little move around with his money or something to get you to the 10. But that's just to get you in compliance. That's not counting for in-season contingency, signing the draft class, and signing any other free agents or retaining anybody else. So a lot of work to be done there.
We kind of knew this ahead of time, that this was going to be a large pig in the python that was going to be difficult for the Ravens to digest in terms of their other offseason moves. It basically precludes them from making other early free agency moves, which, by the way, given their comp situation right now, I don't think they're really eager to do to you know, have some offsets to the current set of compensatory picks they're looking at getting. But they don't want to have a situation where they're can't make any moves when they present themselves. Right. And it really will either take a restructure of Matabike, a multi-year deal with him, or potentially a trade of him, if that were the case. I did see, by the way, some good discussion about what Matabike's trade value might be. And I want to get your thoughts on that if they decide they can't come to a long-term deal and they have to trade him.
I think my opinion has changed a little bit on Matabike throughout the course of the last few months. Some of the advanced metrics made me think he's a little bit more valuable and does a little bit more of his autonomous of his work and his production autonomously. So I would probably be, I think you got to get an early second round pick. I think at this point, I've sort of come around to the idea of a Matabike led front with Travis Jones and Odafe Owe and a veteran on the other side, and that really comprising a strong foundation for a consistent pass rush over a multi-year period.
Yeah, I mean, love the guy as a player. Obviously, there was a lot of cleanup activity that did that. I, you know, in some ways, he could become a better pass rusher this next year, and I think he could take a big step back in terms of the number of sacks still. So he just may not be working. To me, one of the guys who the Matabike contract impacts is Clowney. So if they want to get Clowney back, and I really would love for them to find a way to do that, then they need to come up with some money for that. And that means, you know, a change has to be made. I don't personally believe Ronnie Stanley's going to be cut. And the other two guys they have are also tackles, Moses and McCary, who are a significant component of the money, besides Ricard, as you mentioned. I guess I could see cutting McCary as maybe the most likely of those three tackles. I know I'm probably alone in that regard, but I think Stanley's the obvious left tackle. If you draft your left tackle, you might feel like you're in a position to cut McCary at that point, or maybe
trade him. McCary.
Or trade.
You trade McCary. I think you could probably get a third round pick or day three pick for McCary just because of the scarcity of tackles. And he's, you know, league average, a little bit below league average. Teams, not every team has that. So I don't want to deal away tackles unless you have to. I mean, they're just so precious and so hard to find.
It's a good point. What so, a six maybe for McCary might be reasonable, because we've seen that the end of camp market is typically a seven or a conditional seven for whoever you're going to end up cutting. But in the case of left tackle, it's usually one round higher is what I've seen. It's usually a six.
Right. I think McCary have a lot more value than an Alex Lewis or some of the other, Jermaine Illuminor, some of the guys they gave away for peanuts. So, it's the biggest question. Having not a top strong, necessarily elite two deep at tackle, but having a capable, stable group two deep at tackle, it's a pretty good place to be.
All right. Number of other cuts across the league. I guess we're ready to move on to that. The one thing that really stands out is it's a good year to cut a safety.
Yes, sir.
Seahawks leading the charge there, cutting both Jamal Adams and Condre Diggs.
Yes, sir.
When you look at that market, do they need a Zoom call of their own now?
I don't know. So today, Denver cut Justin Simmons, who's been an All-Pro. Jordan Poyer was cut by Buffalo. Kevin Byard was I thought Hyde was UFA, and Byard from Philly, who was traded from Tennessee. And that's on top of, according to PFF, there's already 11 safeties in their top 150 of free agents. So it's a very flooded market of safeties. Could present an opportunity for the Ravens to dive in with players that either don't affect the compensatory formula because they've been cut, or waiting until the third or fourth wave where the formula has already, you know, run its course. It's a lot of cuts and a lot of safeties out on their, out of work right now.
So Geno Stone potentially affected by this. He's a guy obviously who's in now a very crowded safety market. Do you think this might increase the chance slightly that Geno will be back with the Ravens?
I think he could, but as I alluded to in the last episode, I think when you're adding a Matabike and an additional cornerstone contract, you have to tighten your belt a little bit for the second contract guys. You're still going to be able to, I think the Ravens are still going to be very active in the third and fourth contract market, but those second contract guys that can bring you back a compensatory pick that costs a little bit more because of their age, that's somewhere you probably have to save a little bit.
I, you know, obviously my philosophy entirely is about where can you save, but in Stone's case, I think it would have to be a case of he drops into their price range, and he's the one free agent the Ravens have got out there on the market now who I have no idea what his value is. And it's become less clear in the last 24 hours with these safety cuts. It could be that the top end of the safety market actually improved.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Taxes was taxing. Now taxes is relaxing when you file for free.
I can file for free? TurboTax Free Edition. Roughly 37% of filers qualify. Simple form 1040 returns only. See if you qualify at TurboTax.com/free. I can file for free.
Now this is taxes. File for free with TurboTax Free Edition and get your maximum refund. No schedules except for earned income tax credit, child tax credit, and student loan interest. See if you qualify at TurboTax.com/free.
Proves Stone's value because a lot of these teams are missing safeties now, and they see right. Geno Stone, and you can get him for 3 years, $12 million or something. Or it could be, you know, I would have been of the opinion before all these cuts occurred that Geno Stone could have been, you know, a $7 or $8 million a year guy potentially. Right. But it's not out of the question. You know, he had a lot of tackling issues last year, and it's not out of the question he comes back to the Ravens, and it's, you know, the Ravens maybe give him an out the door offer that's like 3 years, $7.5 million, 3 years, $8 million, something like that. And he comes back to the Ravens and says, you know, is that offer still good? Because I'll take it now.
Yeah, well, it's certainly possible. I could also see him going to Seattle with Mike McDonald. You know, they need safeties obviously now, and I'm sure McDonald wants to bring a couple guys if he can to help kind of instill his culture and help with the communication of his scheme and that sort of thing. A couple offensive linemen cut, not a ton. 11 offensive guards in PFF's top 150, so that's a pretty deep group. Only 7 corners, a little shallow there. 11 running backs, very strong there. And 24 outside linebackers in the top 150. So, you know, when you're looking at these numbers, to me, it's stay patient, stay patient, stay patient, stay patient, stay patient at running back, outside linebacker, safety, offensive guard, corner. Preserve those comp picks. You know, you could get, you know, a third or a fourth for PQ and then a fifth for Zeitler, maybe a sixth, fifth or sixth for Geno, maybe even something for Simpson. With this kind of roster construction, you gotta accumulate as many picks as you can going forward.
Yeah, they can't get anything for Odell now with the restructure they did, but honestly, I don't think there was anything that was going to be coming for Odell. And if it would have been, it probably would have been a seventh or something. So even the restructure, you could argue, would be is more value to the team than the seventh round pick. But anyway, it's an interesting group. I don't expect anybody like Gus Edwards or Dobbins or anybody like that is going to generate a pick. I guess it's, you never know for sure, but I think it's unlikely at the running back position that anyone's going to give them a lot of money.
I can't see it. I mean, you look at all the, you know, running backs, maybe the mid round running backs at the combine, and then 11 running backs in the top 150. I mean, there's just no reason to jump they're gone at all there. You wait till the market settles, wait till fourth wave and get somebody cheap and keep those comp picks.
Yeah, well, completely agree. And I'm in favor of not even signing a veteran running back at all. Like they go to look at other people's RN1 cuts, which they'll have a chance to get some other teams' RN1 cuts. Look at the UDFA market, find the stylistic fit for your offense, and Lamar Jackson lifts all boats. And you've proven before that you can find value there. And you've also proven before pretty decisively that you can't find value with veteran backs. Who's the veteran back the Ravens have picked the last several years? And they've had a bunch of them and a bunch of former all pros who really said, yeah, we need another year of that guy.
I mean, I think Ingram his first year, but that was more for his receiving. I thought that really what he brought was the receiving. That was the big, you know, what he was better at than Gus. Yeah, there's few and far between. And when you can get a Justin Forsett, you know, I know we're going back a few years now, but, you know, from the scrap heap, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, Justin Forsett, a rare veteran scrap heap guy, though. Ingram, you know, in the I guess I would say the same sort of category, though. They gave him a little bit of a contract. But the RN1 scrap heap is how they got players like Collins. It's how Mostert got taken away from the Ravens. You know, it's just there's real opportunity there. Just find the guy who fits your stylistic need and plug him into the system with Lamar Jackson. He's immediately going to be quite good. We do have to worry the offensive line might not be as good this year. I think that's needs to be an area of greater focus, but I still don't think the Ravens are going after a guard.
Yes, unless somebody comes super cheap. I mean, there are some pretty good guys in their you know middle of their career, the prime of their career. Jackson from Detroit. They have from Dotson from the Rams, who was traded, and he had a good year. But I don't know. I really don't think you can afford to spend a lot of money at guard with the way this roster is already kind of allocated. So it's again. Patience. I could, other years I've said let's dip in. They have to make a splash, but they need a playmaker. They need a difference maker. They had the difference makers already for the most part. I think they could line up today and they'd have a wild card level team. You know, well, better than that because the other teams haven't filled out their roster. The one position where they need a player, I think, a starter is outside linebacker. And other than that, you know, the other 22 are pretty solid.
Well, let's move on. Talk a little bit about the deal for Nelson Agholor. And I know Brian McFarland had some interesting information about this additionally in terms of the 24 cap cost, but they've dipped back into the void year methodology with Aguilar's contract.
Right. So $1.2 million base, $2.5 million bonus spread out over four void years. So they're pushing just under $2 million into the future. Not a lot of money, but is this the new normal? That because a lot of people are waiting to see, was that a one-time thing last year or is this the new normal? So maybe an indication there.
Yeah, I think my guess is they just can't chew through it all in 1 year is the problem that you know, they had what, 20 million or something pretty close to that in terms of total void dollars, primarily on the Beckham deal, but there was other stuff too. And it's just, even with an increase in the cap, you still have a veteran team and a contending team, and it's not going to be possible to chew through all that in 1 year. And I do want them to get back to zero in terms of void year dollars at some point in the future, but it may take several years. And get used to the notion that this is going to be a year of austerity for the Baltimore Ravens, that they don't have a lot of money to spend and they have less relative money to spend with big differences in cap across the league. Even if the money helped them to get Matabike, it's going to be tight. And if you're saying, oh, we got to do something to get over the hump and whatnot, well, just start with the fact the Ravens are going to have a less talented team in 24 than they will in 23. It's a fact of life. I don't even see the individual players who are going to jump forward in some way. You know, you can point to Travis Jones if you wanted to. You talk to Mitchell, maybe playing more time this next year. But I don't see the individual players who are going to jump forward this year, much less, how the Ravens will be better as a team as a whole.
I agree. You know, they don't have that pipeline of, Simpson will step in, but they didn't have a second-round pick last year because of the Roquan trade. you know, it's all relative, right? How talented is your team? I never agreed with, well, the 2011 Ravens were more talented than 2012. But the 2012 stacked up better against the other teams in 2012 than 2011, hypothetically. So if Buffalo's cutting players and Miami's cutting players and KC's losing players and Cleveland's losing players and Cincinnati's losing players, then maybe you're less talented, but maybe you're still among the top three of the conference. So to me, it's the key is you're going to be less talented, but maintain talent in the positions where you need to. And you can let the talent slide a little bit at running back and will and maybe safety and guard. That's kind of how I would approach it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I certainly have some money tied up in that safety position right now, especially relative to the rest of the league. Jameson Hensley and Jeff Zrebeck both came out with some UFA predictions. I know you wanted to talk about that for a minute. Take us through it.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Hensley just identified three players that he thought he would keep, and they're the exact three that you and I ID'd, I think, two shows ago. Clowney, Darby, and Malik Harrison were his three. Mm-hmm. And then Zrebeck went through the whole list, all 20, and he is projecting that they're going to keep, again, Clowney, Darby, Malik Harrison, Delshawn Phillips, Daryl Worley, Sam Mustipher, and Brent Urban, and everybody else walks. That's just a Rebeck's prognostication. Just overall, I just kind of feel like the way this all season shapes up in terms of what the Ravens need, where is the talent in free agency, and where is the talent in the draft, I think you spend most of your free agent money on the defense and you draft primarily on offense. It looks to align that best that way.
Yeah, I you know, Rebeck's got a good list, and Jeff's always quite good, so I'm not surprised by that. One thing he filled out very well in that group is the Ravens' entire handshake crew is there. So yep. The handshake crew, literally, I mean, Malik Harrison could be signed for 2 years, by the way, or he could be signed for one, but it's the kind of player I think you probably want to make a 2-year commitment at just over the vet minimum for. So $250,000 signing bonus, $200,000 signing bonus, 2 years of the vet min. And then you can't cut him because of that. But you've got Brent Urban. You immediately, I mean, he's a 1 year at a time, completely fungible roster spot who helps you get an extra guy onto your roster for the year. The Ravens are extraordinarily good at that. Daryl Worley. Nobody had more transactions in a season than Daryl Worley did 2 years ago. So Daryl Worley is a guy they'll cut for sure at the end of the roster. And Sam Mustipher is a guy I didn't even know they could cut last year because I thought he was a fourth-year player, and that's the way he was listed. But apparently something gave him an extra year of eligibility an extra year of service time credit. And so he was cut. And I still don't understand it as a veteran. And I think he's clearly a guy that gets cut as a veteran, handshaked right back onto the team again, as the, you know, eighth offensive lineman, probably in this group, a guy who can fill in at either guard or center. But is primarily the backup center. And that sounds like a very, like, I completely concur with Jeff's selections in terms of who they really want back.
Yeah. And there's been, I don't know what it is this week, but all of a sudden there's a lot of pessimism. The Ravens don't have any money. I mean, I think most people that were kind of following it already knew that, but there's pessimism. But if you bring back Clowney, Darby, and Harrison, basically your only need on the entire defense is a safety, immediate need. And then on offense, yeah, you need some offensive line help and another receiver, but that's doable in the draft. I think people are getting a little carried away with the pessimism, some folks.
Yeah, and they need running backs, of course. They probably need two running backs, and they probably do need two safeties, not just one. Maybe Worley is one of two, or maybe he's actually one of three that you that you want to get. But admittedly, your need as you go further down the totem pole at a lot of these positions, whether it's safety or running back, is less and less in terms of what you can accept. You accept more just stylistic fits and less the, you know, a player who's a complete game changer. The Ravens have those. And you mentioned earlier, I mean, they have Kyle Hamilton, they have Roquan Smith, and they have Justin Madubuike. And that's a great place to start in terms of who you have. Adafi Owe you might put in that group. So
Marcus Williams, Marlon Humphrey, Brandon Stevens. I mean, they have some players on defense.
Yeah, sure. Well, one of the interesting things I saw this week posted, and this is a I will not mention the service that posted this article, but I will say there's a general category of articles now that seems to show up whenever I turn on my phone and I click over to the internet. I get a general set of articles that's basically like, you know, former All-Pro Browns linebacker, you know, predicted to Ravens. It's like the format of the article thing. I hope you guys aren't doing that at Beatdown. I don't know, but there's so much of that. And all it is the author is examining the thing. And I don't know who came up with the title. Maybe they tell them that's how to title these things. And it's just, it's garbage reporting. I mean, it's because it's not. And it does a terrible job of considering how the player actually impacts this team or would be of value to the team. I mean, it's just because, and by the way, it's universal. It's across all sports, seeing it all sorts of starting pitchers predicted to the Orioles, pretty much every starting pitcher out there, you know, of any value. But the big one this week, Devin White to the Ravens.
Yeah. Lazy journalism, in my opinion. You know, it just seems that another one I saw today was Josh Jacobs for the Ravens. It just seems like some of these, you know, analysts, if you want to call them that, look around the league and say, okay, here's a linebacker with name recognition. What team likes linebackers? Oh, the Ravens like linebackers. What team runs the ball a lot? Oh, the Ravens run the ball more than most. So let's link every single running back on the free agent market to the Ravens and make that case. It's just lazy to me, and it doesn't. When you're trying to build a roster efficiently, which you have to do all the time, especially with a franchise quarterback, you just can't afford. That's just silly to me.
It's formulaic writing too, because they're basically doing the same thing in each of these articles. They may even be somewhat written by AI. I really don't know, but they're basically are saying if you said into your AI program or typed into your AI bot, your AI whatever you're using for AI, make a case for Derrick Henry to be a Raven. You know, it'll spit out a bunch of information about it, and probably in prosaic form, I'm guessing. And you wouldn't have to do too much to it to make it into an article. And that may be what's going on here. But the idea of Devin White being Raven is so heinously stupid that I can't get past it. You look back at White's career. He was awarded a second team All-Pro in 2020. Based almost entirely on the fact that he had 9 sacks. It was, you know, it was good Tampa Bay defense, and they created a lot of opportunities for him. It's be much like if Patrick Queen was allowed to run wild for a year. Mm-hmm. But White, much more deficient as a run defender even than Queen, and Queen has had his problems over the years, a tackler and whatnot, but White is far more deficient as right. Can't get off blocks, doesn't have good recognition to start with, has always been a really lousy coverage guy as well. So it's, you know, that's not something he brings to the table. It's all about like getting sacks from that inside linebacker spot. He's also been an off and on tackler, did not have a terrible year last year, but has not generally been great over his career. But I don't think he'd be an upgrade on Simpson necessarily. In fact, I think, right, you know, the chance for 2024 only, it's not clear to me who would be better that year in terms of value, but it is clear to me that Simpson's about a fifth the cost.
Yes. I completely agree with every word you said there. Makes absolutely no sense at all to me. And I agree with you. There's too much of that sort of clickbaity kind of stuff all around now, even on Twitter and NFL RUMS, and, you know, just spitting up nonsense and trying to generate it. And I guess it's a fun exercise to think about. But even with the running backs, the common thing is, wow, wouldn't it be fun to see Derrick Henry in the same backfield with Lamar? Wouldn't this be so much fun to see Josh Jacobs? We're not looking for fun. We're trying to build the best roster. You know, the objective is not, let's see how fun this experiment is. We're trying to build the best roster. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I think the best way I heard it stated, at least the case for Derrick Henry, it was by Gordon McGinnis. And he said that I'd like to see, I think the Ravens need to sign Derrick Henry just to run the experiment once of what it means to have a big name in the backfield who with Lamar Jackson, to see if that actually, you know, elevates both players or the offense or whatever. And I'm obviously butchering exactly the way he said it. It's not a terrible thought, but it just gets away from trying to be a general manager in the league. I mean, if you're general manager in the league, your first question is your first constraint is the cap. And you have to figure out how do I deal with the limited resources I have in terms of cap and draft capital and deploy them as best I can. And the Ravens have proven year after year that their ability to find those running backs who fit their stylistic need is just at a much higher level than their ability to go out and get veteran running backs and make them produce in our system.
Yeah, the time to make that experiment was when Lamar was still on his rookie contract, if at all.
Yeah.
Now he's in his prime, you got to try to maximize every year. This isn't let's just throw this year away for to make do an experiment type of deal. So
the folks out there, just don't fall for it, damn it. Just quickly, don't do it.
100%.
Voss, always a pleasure to do this show with you. I hope we can do this for years, but tell folks where they can talk football with you and read your other writing.
Absolutely. At Vasilis Beatdown on Twitter, X, Vasilis Beatdown, editor, co-managing editor, and author for Baltimore Beatdown blog. Our friend Josh is starting a new series, Realistic Targets, UFA targets from other teams at every position. Just put the first one out today, so I recommend everybody checking that out.
Yep. Josh Reed was on the Recollection series, which I'm going to try and plug here right now. I just want to make sure I have it right who he did. Yeah, he did Paul Kruger. So that's coming up pretty soon. And an interesting case. But I'm looking for people who want to talk about one Raven from the distant past. And it doesn't have to be the distant past. It could be fairly recent. But ideally, I'm trying to get some of the pre-2000 players as well. Just have to have two or three memories of the guy, and we'll talk about it a little bit, talk about how they fit into the defense or the offense or whatever they played. And would love to meet some new people from this process. Would love to get some new people to have a chance to talk on air about their favorite Ravens and hopefully create some interesting content that's about 15 to 20 minutes long. So not a lot of prep for this sort of thing. Anyway, if you're interested, give me your player by Twitter DM. I'll get right back to you and I'll make sure you have that locked down and we can schedule a time. For Vasilis Ricos, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye. We'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM.